You're listening to a podcast from thebodypro.com. The following podcast was recorded at the 14th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI 2007. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.
This is very different than what you just heard. And this is a direct intervention trial to reduce factors associated with cardiovascular risk in HIV-infected patients. And truthfully, I think the whole issue of increased cardiovascular risk in HIV patients has been ignored too much in the media and press. There's a number of papers now and really an emerging consensus that patients with HIV who start heart are at increased cardiovascular risk. The DAD study, but other studies have also suggested that using hard endpoints and surrogate markers. So with that as sort of as background, there's numerous changes that occur among HIV-infected patients who start highly active antiretroviral therapy, and some of those effects were actually shown by other abstracts in the poster and oral session, including decreased subcutaneous fat, which most people focus on. But in addition to that, many people show a significant increase in truncal or abdominal fat, and that was reiterated in the meeting today. And we've known about that and have wondered about particular strategies to reduce abdominal fat. And as you all know, abdominal fat is a very significant predictor, independent predictor of cardiovascular disease. There's two kinds of abdominal fat. There's the superficial abdominal fat and the deep abdominal fat, subcutaneous and visceral. And we are aiming to reduce visceral abdominal fat. And so we reasoned that there might be potential efficacy of a GH-releasing hormone analog, and you may not be familiar with that, but growth hormone is produced in the pituitary in normal physiology, and there have been many studies now which have given growth hormone, and they are efficacious in terms of reducing visceral fat, but they also have a number of side effects in terms of on glucose and other side effects. And so we did not give growth hormone. What I'm about to talk about is not growth hormone. It is a precursor hormone made typically in the hypothalamus that stimulates the body to make growth hormone. It's a very important distinction. And because of that, it's much more natural and physiologic than giving exogenous growth hormone. So you give this hormone and the body makes its own extra growth hormone, okay? And there's feedback inhibition which is intact, and it's a more gentle physiologic way to do this. And we've actually shown in other studies that growth hormone levels and secretion are reduced in this population, so it makes sense to try and increase that secretion. So we randomized over 400 patients in a 2-to-1 ratio to this drug, TH9507, a GHRH analog, or placebo. And it was a 6-month trial, which is as long as most of the intervention studies for metabolic complications go. And the primary pre-specified endpoint was visceral abdominal tissue, change in visceral, that deep fat I was talking about. And in discussions with the FDA, they viewed a significant effect to be more than an 8% reduction in visceral fat. And so we powered the study to see an 8% reduction, but we're happy to see a 15% reduction in the treatment group versus a 5% increase in the placebo, so like a net effect of approximately 20% difference between treatment and placebo. In contrast, there was a very little effect on subcutaneous fat or peripheral fat. So it was a very preferential effect on the deep visceral fat. And then in terms of pre-specified secondary endpoints, we looked at lipid levels, as was discussed a few minutes ago. And this is not a lipid-lowering drug per se, I'm not saying that, but it has been shown in other studies to affect lipids positively, particularly growth hormone. So we looked at this, and the pre-specified endpoints of triglyceride and cholesterol to HDL improved significantly, as did total cholesterol, as did HDL. And the net effect on triglyceride was approximately 18% change between treatment and placebo, which I might add is better than some lipid-lowering drugs, even though this is not a lipid-lowering drug. So basically, there was a very significant effect on visceral fat, preferential over subcutaneous, and an improvement in lipids. The next thing to consider is whether it improved glucose, worsened glucose, and that was not the case. Glucose remained stable. There was no evidence of hyperglycemia in the study, which is a nice feature. The IGF-1 levels, a measure of growth hormone secretion, were generally physiologic. And in terms of adverse events, there was no overall difference in adverse events, although there was a higher percentage of patients discontinuing due to adverse events. The net difference was 9% between treatment and placebo. So about 10% of patients in the study discontinued due to an adverse event, but there was no difference in serious adverse events. And there was only two adverse events that were more than 10% in prevalence, headache and arthralgia, and they were the same between groups. So if you look at that data compared to data on growth hormone, per se, at the doses used, it's much more tolerable. Yet you get the same bang for the buck. You get the same about 15-20% reduction in visceral fat with an improvement across lipids, but without toxicity in terms of glucose. That was the first phase 3 study. There is a second phase 3 study, which is about to be has recently been initiated in Europe. That'll be a confirmatory study, and if that's positive, then there'll be further discussions with the FDA about potential approval. This is not an approved drug right now. It is not available other than through experimental studies.
Questions? I was wondering if you could clarify all of you, your relationships, who funded you, and if there's a relationship to the drug companies?
Yeah, okay, I'll start. This was funded by Theratechnologies. I'm an independent investigator, but I am a consultant for Theratechnologies, and I help them design the trial.
The SMART was was funded by the NIH.
The first trial was also funded by the NIH.
Question?
Why does this seem to work on one type of fat but not on others?
I wish I knew. There are different receptors for growth hormone, both in quantity and quality, on the different fat depots. There's a long history of different fat depots behaving differently to different stimuli. People with Cushing's, for example, have excess truncal fat and a reduction in extremity fat, and various other hormones affect fat differently. So I don't know the exact answer other than to say that it's probably related to the receptors and the biology of GH on these depots, but it certainly goes in the right direction in terms of what you would want clinically for a result. You don't really want to decrease subcutaneous fat too much. It's a myth that all fat is bad. That's a myth, okay? There are some fat depots that are excellent to have. The subcutaneous fat depot is a good depot to have. It actually improves insulin resistance to have more subcutaneous fat. That's the apple, pear, men, women kind of thing. And so the fact that this reduces visceral and not subcutaneous is important, but we certainly would like to know more about the biology of that. That's a good question.
Over here.
Is it an injectable drug? And what would be the cost?
I don't know the cost because this is not available commercially and I do not have access to that information. It is an injectable drug once a day,
subcutaneous,
once a day. It has there are other GHRH molecules that are twice a day. This has a longer half-life, thus can be administered once a day.
Is there an impact on the patient's overall weight?
No, weight doesn't change, so it's a relative shift in fat. Yeah, so that's an important point.
Yes, second row.
Could I just follow up?
Sure.
Where does the fat shift to?
Well, you know, it's a good question. It probably shifts to some of the subcutaneous areas. If you looked at the graphs on the thing, there was actually a slight increase in subcutaneous fat and a significant decrease in visceral fat. We haven't done very careful weight balance studies to account for all of it, but I would suffice it to say it's not a drug that you would take to lose weight, okay? It's a drug that almost sort of preferentially decreases visceral fat, but not subcutaneous fat. There's no overall effect on weight.
I think you said in your presentation that it seems to be more physiologic to give the releasing factor than to give growth hormone itself in terms of pulsatile release,
right,
and feedback and everything. For a releasing factor, it seems like 2 milligrams is a massive dose. Was this optimized or dose ranging, or how was that chosen?
There was a phase 2 study, Falutz et al., AIDS, 2005, that used a 1 milligram dose versus a 2 milligram dose. So that was sort of somewhat of a dose-optimizing study. And there was a better effect at 2 milligrams with similar safety. There's also been animal tox studies. It is a large dose, but it's not larger than other drugs in that family of drugs, the hypothalamic peptide factors and stuff. And that's what dose is required. But there was a preliminary dose-finding study.
So was this a visual difference for the patients and for the doctor?
That's a very important point. So let me just say, it amounted, if you want to know, you probably don't know what is a 15% reduction in VAT. It was a 3-centimeter reduction in waistline, so pant size, okay? 3 centimeters, okay, if that means more to you. But the question is deeper, which is, did patients notice a difference? And I wish I could expound upon that more, but I can't because the data are still under analysis. There was a very, very detailed questionnaire about how they felt body distress, because people are distressed about this. And so it would be nice to see that it improved their distress, but I can't say one way or another about that.
And beyond that, clinically, 15% is pretty...
15% is a lot. It was 20% versus placebo, remember, but it was 15% within group. I don't know about... You tell me another drug that achieves that kind of... I mean, over 6 months. I'm just saying.
Well, so compare it to what's been seen with growth hormone.
With growth hormone, it's identical to growth hormone. It's not really better. It's not really worse. It's identical, but the difference is it's achieved at a more physiologic level.
Yeah, but the question really is that really going to improve their health? Their heart health?
I don't know. I mean, based on the association seen in non-HIV patients, that's a good thing. But the study you're asking for is a long-term, humongous trial looking at hard CBD endpoints. And I challenge you to help us come up with the money for that, and I'll answer your question.
I think we're going to wrap it up there so that we can move on to the next panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from thebodypro.com. For more podcasts and full coverage of major HIV medical conferences, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.